Hack the Entrepreneur is part of Rainmaker FM, the digital business podcast network. Find more great shows and education at rainmaker.fm. Selection, speed, and creativity are just a few of the benefits of having several designers work on your project. Start your next project at 99designs.com/hack and get a $99 upgrade of services free.
Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. It is so very cool of you to join me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is an entrepreneur who started, grew, and sold 6 businesses in 5 years without paying for a single ad. He helps people grow their businesses, and his successful exits include Workout Box and Sin Clothing. He is the founder of Upshare, which offers simple tools that boost sharing and make websites more viral. My guest is also the co-founder of Mentor Mojo, which offers online interactive lessons and mentorship from the world's top entrepreneurs. On top of all this, he is the head of growth at Otto Lotto and the author of Viral Hero. Now, let's hack Travis Steffen. I want to thank today's sponsor, 99designs, the best place for new businesses to build their brands. Need help getting a logo or website for your business or next project, but don't know how to get started? Worried about budget? 99designs can help. 99designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace, makes it easy to get a design you love. Just go to the website, tell them about the design you need, and pick a price package that works for you. Then it really gets fun. Designers from around the globe will submit awesome designs and you'll give them feedback. Within a week, you'll pick your favorite and be the proud owner of a gorgeous new design. With thousands of designers at your fingertips, there's no limit to what you can get designed. So what is it that you need? Boost your brand's visibility with a t-shirt or drive more traffic with a sleek new banner ad or landing page? Projects start at just $199 and your happiness is always 100% guaranteed. When you're ready to bring your brand to life, visit 99designs.com/hack. As a Hack the Entrepreneur listener, you'll get free $99 upgrade to use on your first design. Welcome back to another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. Today we have a very special guest, Travis. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, John.
Absolutely my pleasure. All right, Travis, let's roll with this. Travis, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
The biggest contributing to my successes so far, I would say, is continuing to have a beginner's mind. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, especially when they see some success, begin to develop a little bit of a complex to want to be the teacher. They want to be the person who is imparting knowledge on others and being seen as some sort of authority figure. And that I think everyone goes through, but not everyone emerges out the back from. And I think thankfully I was able to be awoken to that fact early on. And the second I was able to know that I've got the capacity to be the teacher, but I'm going to make a conscious choice to continue to be the student and only impart knowledge when people really dig, that I think has been the biggest contributor to my success, as well as just a ridiculous, sickening work ethic.
Nice. Okay, so this is interesting. Having a beginner's mind, and so it's hard, right? It's something that people go through, especially when you start to have some successes, then obviously you want to maybe teach. How, like, what happened that you were going, like, that you made this realization? Because you're right, I don't think most people make this realization.
Yeah, I think it was more an observation among other founders that I was around a lot and starting to see how their want to teach really inhibited their ability, their willingness, and their speed at which they can learn. And that really is the end all be all as far as like the evolution of an individual, the evolution of a founder, that sort of thing. I think that is the biggest thing that, because anyone can get lucky. Anyone can be a founder that, you know, might be in the right place at the right time with the right partners in the right sector and roll the dice and win. But what most founders unfortunately go through is the belief that because they succeed once, they can succeed every time through the same means, in the same methods, using the same tools. And that is the furthest thing from the case. So I think for me, it took having success and then having a failure afterwards to really realize that that was not only a possibility, but a normalcy. If you take the approach where you know, you think you know the truth, or you think you know the way to go about doing it because you've got a sort of confirmation bias. Now, I would say there's a really interesting crossover between this and stocks trading. Like if you're a trader or you're a growth investor or something like that, a lot of people, the interesting part of the stock market is you can have some serious success very early on just because you guessed right. And it's the same thing in entrepreneurship. But what happens is if you continue to make investments over and over again, over time, the market will beat you in the face with a baseball bat. And it's going to humble you, and you're going to have to be forced to either learn or quit. And I think that the fortunate part of investing is you make so many investments that you get to that humbling point a lot sooner. But as a founder, you might stay in one venture for 2, 5, 10 years at a time. So your exposure to that is very, very sparse. And you might invest every penny you have in the world into a venture and you believe your own hype and you go broke as a result. I know I have. So thankfully, being able to go through that process and continue to go through that process is what reinforces that confirmation bias is bad. You need to continue learning even if you've seen success and you've taken the right path and been successful before. Because if you don't, your competitors will.
Yeah, very well said. And I think that's a very key clarification to make for people is this idea that anybody can get lucky. And whether that's like the lottery or say a casino, right? Like you said, with the stock market, you can walk in and your first hand of blackjack, you can win huge, or your first round of poker. But if you play long enough, the house is going to win. That's just how it works. But it's funny because when we go into something, a venture, especially if it's like near the beginning of our careers as an entrepreneur, we get lucky and do succeed, it does go to our heads quickly. It does. Like, oh, we did everything right. It's like, well, you were born at the right time and right place to have certain things line up for you. But it's hard to, until you've had that failure, right? It's hard to like step back and be like, oh, maybe I did get lucky.
Yeah. I mean,
no one wants to admit that.
Definitely. And I think, honestly, it happens at the highest levels. And I've got really good friends, you know, business partners, former partners, mentors, all of them, you know, either have gone through this or have continued to go through this type of thing. And, you know, we really do have to fight through things as founders, because a lot of times people, especially young bucks that are coming up, and I say this from an elderly 27 years of life, you know, will really reinforce, like, you know, they'll try to, you know, compliment you a lot because maybe you've inspired them or maybe you've done something that they respect. And if you hear that enough, you really start to feel like, I don't know, like a professional athlete who scored 5 touchdowns in their last game and suddenly you're the greatest thing since sliced bread. And maybe you're just going to work a little bit less hard the next day, or maybe you're not going to think that you need the extra conditioning drills that, you know, somebody on the come up might. And pretty soon, you know, you're going to get passed up and you're going to get forced out of the game. And then you're going to be wondering what happened. Now, thankfully, as a founder, you can always get back in. So if you don't have to go through something like that, and if you don't have the ability to bury that part of your ego, and don't get me wrong, it's very healthy to have a healthy dose of confidence as a founder, as well as a healthy dose of ignorance. And I guess like enough of an ego to feel as though you've got a higher perceived capacity to achieve. However, that ego should not extend to the point where it prevents you from learning.
Yeah, that's a good clarification, because it's true. Without some sort of ego, I don't think you could make it in this business of business.
Yeah, definitely.
Because you do have to believe in yourself enough to put things out there that lots of people are going to think is ridiculous or crazy, you're not going to work, and you have to kind of force your way through it. And you can't do that without the confidence.
Definitely. I mean, perceived ignorance can be paralyzing. If you're someone who sits there and says, you know, I want to start a business or I want to do XYZ in my business, but I just don't know anything about it. Well, okay, you can be that person that sits there and says, I don't know anything about it and doesn't do anything, or you can go learn. You have the internet. Get on Google. What is the discussion? So that's always kind of fascinating to me, and that's how I can kind of tell between someone who's going to be a successful founder and somebody who won't. Because if I can get on Google and find your answer on the first page, like, I'm not going to invest in you. I'm not going to help you, because you can't help yourself.
Yeah, that's hard. Like, I mean, you literally have the answer to everything at the touch of a few buttons. Like, you have to be willing to just go look, because the answer, somebody's been through what you're trying to go through or something you are trying to do.
Definitely.
It's just the way it is. All right, Travis, there's a time in every entrepreneur's life when they realize one of two things. Either they have this calling to make something big and make this huge difference in the world, or, as to mostly seems to be the case, they find they simply cannot work for somebody else. Can you tell me which side of the fence you fall on and when you discovered this about yourself?
I discovered that I was pretty much unemployable the second I tried to have a job in high school. And I probably went through 4 or 5 of them and quit the first day, every single one of them. My parents thought I was a freeloader. They thought I was either destined to live on their couch or someone else's couch for the rest of my life, because I just did not want to go to work. But I was always that guy that wanted to, like, I had this new money-making idea or whatever it was. And those kind of things that really interested me. So, you know, had a conversation with my mom at one point early on. She basically told me, you either have to figure out how to make your own money, or you need to figure out how to move some things around in your brain so you can make money from someone else's company. And so I started my first company when I was an undergrad at the University of Northern Iowa. It actually was not a world-changing idea. It was basically like, I was a professional mixed martial arts fighter at the time, and I started the clothing line around that space, basically like a clone of Tap Out, which is a major mixed martial arts apparel and equipment brand. And we started one of those and traveled around to the small shows, and that was fun. I mean, I barely made any money. I probably spent more than I made, but I learned a lot of things. And that led me to the next one and the next one and the next one. And now that I've gone through 17 different companies, 6 acquisitions, consulted for God, I don't know how many brands, and built over 100 applications, it's now I've evolved into that person who has world-changing ideas and feels like they're capable of doing something like that. I have some end game ventures that I still don't think I'm capable of accomplishing yet, but I feel like I'm, you know, following the necessary stepping stones to acquire the knowledge and the capital and the connections and the, I guess, insider insight into the navigation of how that would happen. And there are different steps along the way that thankfully I've taken. And thankfully there have also been lessons that I've learned, as far as, you know, maybe either one of those reasons, either I have an idea or I don't want to work for somebody else. Maybe neither one of those reasons is the reason to start a company. For example, like, I think most founders will start companies because they have an idea. And now that I know what I know, I think that that's a bad place to start. Instead, and it's unfeasible to think that that will change, because it's what gets most people interested in entrepreneurship. But if you're like a multi-time founder and you want to start something even more successful, I think the thing that you need to do in advance is to map out the characteristics of the market you want to attract. You need to map out the characteristics of the company you want to start. And you also need to map out your viral loop before you ever inject an idea into that framework. And, you know, because what mostly happens is people will come up with an idea that they think is awesome. They don't go through the necessary rounds of customer development. They don't go through the necessary rounds of allowing the idea to evolve. And they don't go through the necessary rounds of learning how they're going to market it or how much people would pay for it. And they just build it. And there's something to be said for that, because you need to go through those failures, because the vast majority of the time, like, you will either get lucky or you'll fail, but it's going to be one or the other. It's like, you're not going to succeed because you did a great job of mapping all those things because you haven't. You've basically just stumbled upon what works. And maybe that's you. And maybe that's great. Maybe you've learned that along the way. But if you can take a step back, if you, for example, sell your company or fold up shop and decide to move on to the next one, I would challenge any founders that are in that position out there to find the market first, define the sales model first, define, you know, exactly where to find people and how much it's going to cost to connect with them first, and define the ideal viral structure of, you know, a company that spreads itself first before you inject any sort of solution to any problem or anything like that in. Because if you do that, you're going to see a lot more success a lot quicker for a lot less money. And you're actually going to be doing something that adds value to a subset of a market.
Yeah, you said, wow, a lot of things there that really touched on. First of all, the whole people, typically they have this idea and lots of times it follows like a passion of theirs. Mm-hmm. And you're right, that's totally not usually the right place to get into business. Mm-hmm. Like to me, it's like find a very good market to enter that you can make money, not easily, but easier than you could in a lot of other markets. And then take that money to buy yourself spare time to go and enjoy your passions. Mm-hmm. That to me is such a better business model. But
I agree.
What's this viral loop you call? And you say how an idea to spread, like what, do you have an example of that? Like what?
Sure.
Put that
sure.
into people's heads.
Yeah. So actually for clarification, my company today is called Upshare. We build viral marketing tools as a software as a service company. And one of the things that I've been forced to do as the founder of that company is educate myself more than who I feel anyone else in the world has in terms of viral growth mechanics. And during that journey, we've basically broken down 12 different viral loops into like an explanation of, okay, after the fact case studies and how you can do this yourself types of maps. And that's just in our free blog over at upshare.co/viral hero. But basically what I mean is there is a path, just like you have a path from lead to sale to active customer, and you've got a very clearly defined path. There's also a path for lead to customer to referrer or inviter or sharer, someone who is taken down a certain subset of actions to the point where they see value in inviting other people to be exposed to your product. And they do this because you're providing them some sort of value that blends with the value that they've gotten from coming to your site to begin with. So to clarify a little bit more, let's give an example, Dropbox. Everyone should know what Dropbox is, but if you don't, Dropbox is a cloud file storage and collaboration platform. You can upload files, you can store them in the cloud, you can share access to them with others, et cetera, et cetera. Huge company and has succeeded in large part due to the multiple viral loops they've created within their user experience. So, for example, when you become a member of Dropbox, you're immediately given the ability and the know-how to upload your files to a Dropbox folder from your computer. You don't necessarily have to store them on your hard drive at this point. You can store them on your Dropbox. Now, there is value there without anything else happening. You now have the ability to store files elsewhere without taking up space on your computer. However, there is an additional value that's arguably even more valuable, and that's inviting others to share access to those files without having to use email like you had to use in the early days, or using various like file transfer services. And those were a little bit more clunky and a little bit more labor intensive. But now you can streamline the whole process, and you actually have like inherent value as a user. You can unlock more value by spreading the product to others. So that, in effect, is a viral loop. And Dropbox made it more likely and more frequent that a user will engage in this viral loop by adding an incentive over top of it, which is additional free storage space for you and for the person who's being invited. So that is a really strong example of a viral loop that basically grew the company for them. And if you read up on the history of the company, these guys tried paid ads, they tried PR, they tried everything under the sun, and nothing really worked. but they were still doing pretty well. And it's because they accidentally created this viral loop. And this these two examples of what I just talked about here were called viral collaboration marketing and viral incentive marketing. Viral collaboration marketing is a viral loop where you have some value in the product by using it by yourself, but you can unlock more value in the product by working collaboratively with others whom you invite and expose to the product. And you do this not because you're being paid to, not because you're obligated to, but because you want to, because you can unlock more value for yourself and for your organization and better achieve your goals by inviting others. Growth, in essence, is one of the biggest failure points of most companies. Most companies don't fail because they don't have a great product. Most companies fail because they can't figure out a cost-effective way to grow. And if you're able to inject virality into your product from day one and build it deep into the bones of your product, that's when you can create some sort of phenomenon like Dropbox. Now, if you're not prepared for it, if you're not educated, that can still be a point of failure, especially if your viral loop is very effective, because now you've got scaling issues, now you've got staffing issues, now you've got funding issues, now you've got so many different users that your engineering costs go up and you start to have different problems. So there is cause and effect here, but those problems are much, much more preferable than no one will use our product. Now, viral incentive marketing is basically blending your viral value, your inherent viral value, basically the value that your users get for inviting others without being paid or incentivized anyway, and then adding an additional incentive over top of it that, you know, in Dropbox's case, they could have offered cash, but it wouldn't have been nearly as effective as offering free space, because a lot of these users, you know, they might not give a crap about $5 or $10. They care about the problem they came there to solve, which is storage space. And if you can give me more storage space and you can give me a better environment through which to solve my problem that I came to you to solve, the viral loop becomes much more powerful. And if you're someone like Dropbox who makes that process quick and efficient, then all of a sudden you've got a hit, because the cycle time, effectively the amount of time it takes for one of those viral loops to happen, is so short that your growth can potentially be exponential. Another example would be YouTube in the early days. Now, every single time anyone shares the latest funny video, the biggest misconception about virality is that this video, whether it's the little kid after the dentist or the latest hilarious cat video, these videos are not going viral. YouTube's player is going viral. Those items that are within the player are just the viral media. Basically, what people are sharing, what they think they're sharing is the video, but what they're actually sharing is YouTube's player that houses the video. And every single time someone shares a video, YouTube either activates or reactivates a user. And that platform is what goes viral. The people who are adding content to YouTube are actually using a form of direct response marketing that's a lot more akin to PR instead of viral marketing, which is using your own users to market for you. So that's, in essence, kind of like a little bit of a clarification on the theory of viral marketing. There's so much more that this is one of the most misunderstood topics in all of growth. And I'm talking about the heads of venture capital firms, of billion-dollar firms. I'm talking about the founders that are at the forefront of tech companies that are billions of dollars strong. A lot of them will write about it through their one limited context. Very few people have said, all right, I'm going to become an expert on all things virality as it pertains to the web. There are one or two people like this, but a lot of times those people have become experts in order to build their own companies, not to teach others. And while I have become an expert on it to build my companies now in the future, I'm also teaching others, because that's kind of one of the values that we provide. And it's one of the methods of viral feeding that we offer to our growth engines for our company, for our inbound tactics. We basically said we wanted to become the market leader in viral growth education as well as tools. So that's where I feel like we're kind of shining at the moment. If you really want to become an expert in this type of thing, not only go to Viral Hero, but you're going to have to dig into really dry and academic blog posts from venture capitalists, also research papers from the CDC and virology. It's not a fun topic to research. So basically what we wanted to do was create a more fun and engaging way of teaching people how all this works. It's still so confusing because it can be either exponential if done incredibly well, or it can just basically be an additional element that you add over the top of an existing growth engine to effectively get you a discount on your ad spend. Because for every user you pay for, they'll bring, you know, a fraction of a user back to you on average. So if you pay for 100 users, you might get 120. And that might make a growth channel that you couldn't previously use because it wasn't cost effective. Now you can make that cost effective. And if your competitors couldn't use it, suddenly that channel is a little bit less saturated and it might be a little bit more effective for you. So that might be a huge competitive advantage if you can educate yourself enough on the topic to really think about it and how you can use it. And to be clear, it's a lot more difficult to bolt it on after the fact. You're doing yourself a huge favor if you can educate yourself on this stuff before you build your product, but it is better. It's always better late than never. You know, even if you get a percentage of virality more than you had yesterday, like for a lot of companies at scale, it can be worth like tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, totally. But it doesn't have to be like a revolutionary viral element. But I agree that every business should have virality built into it in some way.
Definitely.
It's just, and it can be in the simplest of ways, like small companies, like WordPress theme companies do it where their footer will by default say this theme brought to you by with a link to their site. Mm-hmm. And 50% of the people that use it will leave that.
Yeah,
link
and
there.
This is actually this is a form of virality called viral signature marketing, and you'll actually see this not only for theme companies but companies that have
sent from my iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. So that's viral communication marketing. That's a different one. And I'll tell you why here in a second. But like viral signature marketing, if you see like a powered by link at the bottom of any like widget, or if you have like a hosted checkout page that's powered by Stripe or Chargeify or something like that, or you've got our Upshare social media buttons that are, you know, that have our icon on them or our tool that says powered by Upshare at the bottom, that's viral signature marketing. Now, sent from my iPhone is viral communication marketing because I'm using a tool to send a method of communication not only to other iPhone users, but to the outside world as well. Another example of this was the legendary viral hit Hotmail, who grew because of their viral signature that they automatically added to the bottom of every email sent by any of their free users that said, get your free email account from Hotmail, and with a link back to their site. And they grew to the largest email provider in the world in, you know, very, very short period of time, and ended up selling to Microsoft for $400 million because they had a self-driving growth engine. This was not a problem that Microsoft had to spend time and effort and engineering in order to solve. It was solved for them. Now they just had to make the product a little bit better. So they basically were de-risked at that point. The acquisition was a no-brainer.
Did they also kind of get lucky with
timing? Absolutely.
That was like the advent of email. Yes. Like I remember being in high school when that came out and being like, what do you mean email? And then all of a sudden, get an email account, and then all of a sudden it was just Hotmail everywhere.
Yes.
Links just flying like you couldn't believe. And it's like, right, it's like they couldn't have came out in 2010 and had the same success
and
with
most
what
viral
they did.
Hits
That's hard.
Do get very lucky with timing, because if they can introduce a problem that adds enough value to their users while injecting viral marketing mechanics, that's when you see a hit like Hotmail. And most of these guys, since viral marketing is such a misunderstood topic, I mean, most people think that it's like unconventional PR campaigns that people talk about or social media buttons for their website. And it's not that. It really isn't. But most of the time that this has been done successfully by PayPal, Dropbox, Hotmail, everyone, it's done by accident. And it's done because they've been lucky. These founders, in large part, were engineers. They were not growth engineers. They were software engineers. But someone talked them into adding a certain element, or they had some sort of collaborative engine that they were starting from the very beginning. And they had an idea that it would impact growth, but most of them were not, growth by nature folks. Mm-hmm. And it's not something that's really taught to marketers. It's not something that's taught to engineers. So it's not something that's taught to existing founders that have had success in the past. So viral marketing is actually this really deceptive, like, you know, it's often sought after and wanted, but most of the time, I would say 99.9% of the time or 100% of the time, it's misunderstood to the point where most people just ignore it. Because most people don't even really know what it means. Most people will assume if you ask someone what viral marketing is, they'll basically say like, oh, we need to do a video like Viral Shave Club or Dollar Shave Club.
Exactly.
And that's false.
I know.
That's unconventional PR. It's not viral marketing. So yeah, I mean, it's the more I educated myself on this realm and had to innovate and create rules and create frameworks myself to even be able to teach this or get other people to understand it, the more I realized how much it's mistaught and, you know, and how many people, even at the top of the top levels, maybe understand 30% of it. So it's really exciting for us to put this resource out. And admittedly, it's going a little bit more slowly than we would want. We actually have the whole resource written, but we're learning a lot about inbound content promotion, and we're doing a round of funding at the same time. And all of our employees are engineers except for me. So I'm kind of tiptoeing on the growth front, the content marketing front, the fundraising front, and also I'm the sole UI UX designer at our company. So I'm wearing a lot of hats at the moment. So forgive me if you're actually a Viral Hero fan at how slow this is going. We actually have 6 posts out to the public right now. We just launched this a couple of weeks ago. You know, we typically want to release 1 per week, but I have a little catch up to do in promotion. So it might take another week or so to release that next post, but head on over and subscribe and actually educate yourself and, you know, have some fun with our little Kung Fu Panda character that we created to help teach you. It's actually one of the things that I'm most proud about our company, even though we have a great viral coefficient ourselves, we've got a great net promoter score, we've got, you know, great analytics and good tools. The thing I love most about the company, oddly enough, is our panda. So go check him out at the very least. It'll take you 2 seconds.
That's awesome. Can people also reach you, Travis, on Twitter? Are you on there?
Yeah. Hit me up on Twitter at Travis Stephan. I'm really active on Twitter, not nearly as active on Instagram or on Facebook. I will post to those for business reasons because I know a lot of different people prefer to be reached in different ways. But I'm really, really active on Twitter. You can see me every day thanking every single new follower, every single retweet, favorite. Personally, that is me writing all of that. So yeah, hit me up with any questions, any comments, any feedback, any ideas. If you're a young founder that hit product market fit and you're looking for investment, also hit me up because, you know, that's such a hard thing to do. And I'm always looking for new founders to work with and hopefully build virality into their company from day one.
Yeah. That's awesome. And yeah, so I strongly suggest everyone reach out to Travis on Twitter, thank him, give him comments and follow up with further questions. He's there and he wants to answer you. So Travis, thank you so much for taking the time to stop by and chat with me today. I totally, totally appreciate it. And just please keep doing what you're doing, Travis, because it's really inspiring and awesome to watch.
My pleasure, John. I'm stoked to see, you know, all the hard work that you put in come to fruition as well, even more so than it already has. So looking forward to coming on again in like a year and sharing updates on both fronts.
Excellent. Thank you, sir.
Awesome, man. We'll see you soon.
Travis, thank you so much for joining me today. That was a lot of fun, and I'm glad we got to have that conversation. I really, really am. I talk a lot about how you don't need to be born an entrepreneur. You don't need to be starting businesses when you're 12, 13, 15, 18 years old, and to be successful later on in life. That's absolutely not necessary. But Travis there proved in this conversation that it also doesn't mean that you will not go on to do cool things. It's just not a prerequisite. But I love that he has the story of talking to his mother, and his mom's just like, you got to figure out how to make money. And he did. He started young, and he's just built numerous businesses, and it was cool. It was a great, great conversation, and I'm glad we got to clarify that. So going back through the conversation, I don't know if you do this as much as I do, but I do this a lot. I go back through the conversation because there's just so many things that Travis said, right? But then something catches me. There was just that one thing that Travis said that really, really, really stuck out to me. That one thing. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Map out the characteristics of the market you want to attract. You need to map out the characteristics of the company you want to start, and you also need to map out your viral loop before you ever inject an idea into that framework.
And that's the hack. So very, very, very well said, Travis. This is so key. And so Travis goes on to discuss about how you have to know these things before ever injecting the idea of an idea into it. You need to know, mapped out fully, the characteristics of your customer, the company that you want, and then your viral loop and the marketing that's going to go into this. Because otherwise, you're starting from the wrong point. Travis wants you to start with these ideas laid out and then build the business, find the customers, build the business, and create the marketing based on what you've all, basically work backwards, which is brilliant. I love that, Travis. And this is essential, not even for just knowing how to create a viral loop, as Travis explains it. But to me, this goes beyond that and just ensuring that the business you are working to create is the one that you truly want, the one that will truly define happiness and success to you, the way you define it, not the way it's defined by anyone else, but the way you define it. If you don't start with those end ideas and those end goals in mind and work backwards and make sure that you create the company that will bring you there, you're firing off into the dark, and you're going to end up with one of those businesses or companies that just runs you into the ground, works you too hard, and ends up not being, it becomes a job rather than a business that is creating and kind of providing the lifestyle that you have set out for. So Travis, thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bringing that home. And I appreciate the thoughts on that. All right. This has been a lot of fun. We went a little bit longer today than we normally do, so we'll wrap up quickly. But I thank you. Thank you very much for joining me. As always, I truly, truly, truly do appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.